Hello, my name is Joanne Murphy. I'm Chief Operating Officer at the Chartered Banker Institute. I'm delighted to welcome you to our podcast series on inclusive leadership. My guests today are Mark Fried and Gary Ford.
Last time, we talked a lot about the different lived experiences of people that have been traditionally underrepresented at senior levels in most organisations, using the term accidental sexism.
We also talked about getting more men involved and finding the answer to the question, what's in it for me? In today's session, we're going to discuss what we can do to remove accidental sexism from our workplaces, or at least reduce the possibility of them happening, or lessen the impact when they do. And from that, we're going to explore the idea of inclusive leadership, what it is and what it's not. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Joe.
Welcome to today's session. So I'm going to start off with you. So what's your top tips on being an inclusive colleague, and how can we all do more to be more inclusive?
Thanks, Joe. I think the starting point for this has always got to be about, a little bit of self-reflection. So sort of thinking about how you kind of interact with colleagues within your own team. And I think I'm going to kind of cover this a little bit in that kind of team dynamic sort of sense. And I think one of the key things around this is this idea of being very curious, and therefore maybe taking a bit of extra effort to seek out, and understand a little bit more about your colleagues and a little bit more about their lived experience, particularly those colleagues which are potentially look quite different to you or maybe come from a very different background to you. And then, by understanding and having those conversations, I think you can, hey, you can learn a whole load about, not only their personal backgrounds, but also some of the strengths that might be helpful to bring into your team, kind of workplace. I think the next thing then is, often when you find yourself in a group situation, I think, I think you have a role to play in making sure that those group situations give everyone kind of equal access to, to contribute in some way. I think you can begin to look out for if there's a very dominant voice, can you kind of maybe try and help, that person understand that they're an overly dominant voice and they may be sort of like not allowing others to get into the conversation. And I think also one of the things you have to do is maybe, if you see something that you don't feel comfortable with, be prepared to maybe call it out and say, look, I don't think that's how we want to work as a team. And what you just said or whatever doesn't feel appropriate, and that's difficult. I kind of recognize that. And one way that maybe you can make that a little bit easier for your colleagues is this idea of actually saying to them that you're okay to be called out, right? You say to them, look, I'm absolutely not perfect, and I will still make mistakes. When it comes to these type of conversations, and if I do. Yeah, please let me know. I mean, it's clearly not my intent to offend or to make people uncomfortable, but we all get stuff wrong. So I think being a little bit vulnerable yourself, and kind of opening up that conversation, but also being a little bit ready, kind of maybe to challenge and to shout stuff out. Also, I think really when you see other people doing a really nice job of being inclusive, you need to kind of recognize that and call it in some way and say, thanks, Mark. I noticed you handled that difficult conversation really well, and I think hopefully people appreciate that. And then I think the final thing I was going to raise is just this idea that I think in today's workplace, where you're kind of like the 24-hour always on type mentality, I think we need to be a bit more respectful of people's personal time and personal space that sometimes, and just maybe try to not assume that our colleagues are, are likely to answer emails out of hours, or not expecting people to take calls around on holiday. Lots of small things so that people feel like they have the organisation is kind of allowing them to maybe do the best work that they can.
Yeah, because that's difficult, isn't it? If you get an email late at night from your boss, then you feel obliged to do it, or you're being judged if you don't do it, even though it's your free time. And
Absolutely.
I think, it really raises back those points that we discussed in the first episode as well about this whole thing that we need to start being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And lots of these things make us uncomfortable. Thanks, Gary. Just really focusing on that, Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. If I could just come to you now and just sort of building on that, these questions like or the discussion that we had in on episode one as well is, you know, that some men do naturally feel threatened or concerned by these types of conversations. And what would you say are the sort of practical things that we can do to address those concerns?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I think it's a great question. I think let's go back and just briefly recap on what some of the things we said in episode one. A lot of men are thinking that sort of their relative advantage is being taken away. They also think maybe this whole journey that we're on is against them, and there's nothing in it for them. In fact, you know, many see this as a loss. And I think it's really important, therefore, to help men to understand that actually this is a win-win. You know, there's so much in this for men as well. And to do that, we need open conversations. We need dialogue. We need to help them to understand that things aren't stacked against them. And you know, there may be little elements of positive discrimination around, but that's not systemic. And you know, men have got and could have so much more opportunity and choice in their lives if they embrace inclusivity. It also, you know, it makes them better leaders. It helps their career. It helps their health and well-being. It gives them the choice to be the type of man, the type of human being that they want to be and could be. But by embracing this, it takes very little away from them. And we need those conversations. We need those role models. To be demonstrating that this is good. This is good. It's great for men as well.
So more to gain than there is to lose
Yeah, absolutely.
in terms
Absolutely.
of leadership. Gary, something that we've heard you speaking about is previously is like social bonds. And can you just tell me more about what the idea is behind, like how we form social bonds and how it's much more easy for us to work and develop relationships with those that look like us? And how do we go about disrupting that?
Yeah, and it's funny actually. I mean, most of the clients we've worked with, when we kind of get access to either their own employee opinion surveys, or we run a little bit of research ourselves, invariably there's a comment about there being some sort of kind of old boys network within an organization, because we can't help ourselves. We do tend to sort of like create social connections far more easily with the people that look like us. And actually, Mark and I were at a client site a few weeks ago. We ran some workshops. We broke for lunch, and we went down to the sort of staff canteen for lunch. And we kind of looked around the room, and like it was amazing that everything was on gendered lines, right? It was a table of men next to a table of women next to another table of men. It's kind of amazing how easy it is that people just make these connections along those kind of gendered lines. But the unfortunate thing, I mean, you know, nothing necessarily intrinsically wrong with that, but the problem is that we know that those type of social connections often lead to opportunities, often lead to kind of informal routes to progress. You know, the age-old adage of it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I think, therefore, you know, if you want, again, back to the ultimate intent of this, to get the most out of people within your workplace, you need to find ways that you can try and disrupt that a little bit. And I think there are a couple of kind of things. There's the kind of more organized kind of arena, and then there's the kind of less formal. If we start with the less formal, I think, and it goes back to the last question I answered a little bit, I think people need to think about, are they sharing their social capital equal within their workplace? Do they always come into the office on a Monday morning and go and have the same conversation about football with the same blokes that we always have that conversation? Or do we make sure that we actually start talking to all of our team members and find subjects where we have a connection that we can make with them? It goes back to being a little bit curious and maybe finding those things about people's personal experiences that where you can build some of that connection and that conversation. So I think sharing your social capital, your social time equally is one of the clear things we need to start taking a look at. And that ranges from who you go to lunch with through to who do you kind of, you know, chat to at the water cooler, who do you sit next to if you have, you know, sort of flexible seating arrangement in the office. But then, you know, we often find a lot of companies kind of, a lot of women in companies, and some men, to be fair, complaining that all of their social events tend to revolve around evenings in pubs or golf days or stuff where women often feel very excluded. So one thing I think people can do is look at, you know, creating a diverse team that, you know, manages the social kind of calendar for your part of the organization. And therefore, you know, you could have, you know, a breakfast kind of get together one day and a lunch one the next and an evening one the following week. But you kind of have a range of different type of activities. You run them at different times of day because often people have commitments in the evening, and you do lots of different things. It could be drinking, that's fine, but it could also be quiz nights or bowling or just, you know, just food. People tend to, you know, be pretty happy to turn up if there's free food on the table. So it's a question of just maybe creating a few various ways to try and, you know, and you can't, you know, it's important sometimes for men to have a space to talk just as men. I think that's also quite important. But you just need to make sure there's variety, right? And you give people the opportunity to have more deeper interactions and more regular interactions with people that don't look like them.
That's a very conscious effort then, isn't it? That's just not just doing what you always do.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually having to make a conscious effort to do something differently. So with act with intent.
Yeah. On that, Joe, there's another idea I quite like. A couple of companies have mentioned they do this idea of coffee roulette, where kind of like a random draw system that kind of connects a couple of people to go and have coffee together, you know, with the hope that, you know, they kind of build some of that kind of, you know, social engagement with each other as well. I kind of quite like that idea.
Yeah, I love that idea, particularly, you know, in a hybrid working environment as well.
Mm.
We don't see as many colleagues and as new colleagues join as well. The opportunity to get to know people, because you're right, it tends to be if you've got, you know, someone and then you talk about, even if in a social setting, but you know if you're talking about work or what you're involved in, and that generates the conversations, you see why these sort of opportunities, or you see somebody's skill set developing, but it's within the circle of, you know, and you spend time with, and it's getting to that psychological safe place, isn't it, that you build this network, wider network for yourself, and actually then it has huge, huge benefits. So yeah, it's all logical, isn't it? I'm going to actually bring Mark in here, because I suppose this is really talking about like inclusive leadership. So Mark, you know, what is it, and what does inclusive leadership look like?
When I think of that term, inclusive leadership, I break it down and I think, well, first of all, it's about being a good human being. We were just talking about social bonds just there. You know, a good human being, a good leader, gets to know their whole team. They understand their whole team. They understand their desires, their aspirations, their interests, their challenges, their strengths, their weaknesses. And that seems to me to be all of the attributes of a great human being. And then also let's talk about a great leader. You know, great leaders develop and form and role model cultures and behaviors that everybody looks up to and adopts and develops. You know, let's ensure people aren't being left out. Let's ensure that you know, people get airtime at meetings. Let's ensure that our work is being distributed evenly and properly. Let's ensure that people aren't getting a relative advantage due to their gender or due to other characteristics. Let's make, you know, this is about fairness. It's about meritocracy. And I think, you know, inclusive leaders, I think back to, you know, when I started work, you know, my bosses bossed. They said, and we did. That's no longer the model. That's been proven outdated. Inclusive leadership is good leadership, and it leads to better outcomes for people and for the firm and for the team and for the business. So I think, you know, inclusive leadership is really thinking and saying, I'm going to turn the mirror on myself, and I'm going to ensure that everything I do, I'm doing as a good human being and as a good leader.
And Joe, if I might build on that a little bit, I think there's this really interesting word around authenticity, isn't there? I think when it comes to leadership, and I think if your CEO is kind of standing up at a big town hall and you know, and talking about all the great progress you're making as a company, about your representation and getting more, you know, underrepresented groups into senior leadership, and talking about, you know, allyship programs or leadership development for a particular community, these are all great things. But if I think if a leader then, you know, 10 minutes later is sending that crappy email at 11 o'clock at night that make people feel really demotivated, if he's or she's slapping down people in meetings in a really, you know, in a really kind of awful way, then I think you kind of lose that authenticity, you know. And I think that there's also, you know, people need consistency with this. So I think most companies are trying to do the right thing in this space. And I think if leaders aren't kind of authentic in their behaviors, then it kind of gets lost. People don't trust it. And therefore people feel that they can also just ignore this subject and not have to deal with it.
Yeah, so it's back to the whole walk and the talk, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Modeling. So I think this might be a good opportunity to bring in a couple of questions that have been sent in by our members. Gary, I'm going to come to you for the first one. So the question we got in is, in a situation where a leader has inclusive leadership skills and practices these skills at work, but a particular team member does not comply with what the leader says, how does the leader handle the team member?
Yeah, so another toughie from the members. So I think, and I don't know if, to be fair, I don't know if this is quite the context of the question, but I think it is worth noting that I think a lot of people maybe equate being inclusive with simply being nice. and I don't think those two, you know, they're not the same thing. And I think you can be an inclusive leader, but also I think every leader, every kind of manager has to make tough decisions from time to time, and decisions that, you know, people won't like, right? And sometimes you can't always get consensus from everyone about a particular direction you need to take. And sometimes you have to move quickly and make fast decisions. And, you know, hey, you will still sometimes get that wrong. So I don't think that being an inclusive leader means that you can't take tough decisions and give people very direct and very actionable feedback. So in this particular situation, I think fundamentally, and I guess, you know, I mean, complying with what the leader says is an interesting kind of choice of words. But I think if you have an individual in your team that you don't feel is kind of delivering the outcomes you expect of them, however you might define that. And I think one of the things we get stuck on sometimes as managers in organizations is it's all about the what. It's all about what people deliver. It's less about the how and how they've delivered it. And I think those two things are both equally important. And I think if people are not delivering things in a way that you find acceptable as the leader, then I think you have to have some honest conversations with that person and say to them, look, you know, this is not the way I want my team to operate. You know, here's my expectations of you. Here's my expectations. And hopefully, actually, one of my tips to any kind of manager or leader is, you know, you and your team create an expectation of how you operate. You set your own, you know, your own culture contract, if you like, right? And if people don't kind of live up to that, I think as a leader, you absolutely have to address that and have a proper conversation. And at the end of the day, you can always end up with a conversation where you say, look, if you can't operate in the team in which I want you to operate, then it's probably not a great thing for either of us to be in the same team. So I think you can end up with some really tough conversations. And sometimes there isn't a great fit. Sometimes, you know, a person wants to work in a particular way that doesn't fit in with the way you want to run your team. That's okay. But obviously it means that they need to maybe not be in your team, because that's not, you know, that's not what you want and that's not how you want to operate. So in conclusion, I think it is about, irrespective of, you know, this word inclusion, I think there is always a, you know, you've got to set a standard, you've got to hope people live up to the standard, and when they don't, you've got to find ways. And I always think you start off with coaching, mentoring, support, and trying to get people to kind of pick up and operate the way you want to do. But if it's something that they either plainly can't do or are unwilling to do, then you have to have a tough conversation.
Gary, I think that's as much about, so, you know, inclusive leaders need team members who are also inclusive. Yes. You know, it's a two-way street, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It does take you back. I mean, I think just on that point about the what and the how, I do sometimes think that it's actually the how that in some ways does matter more. How you go about things, how you make people feel to get the results. Yes. At the end of the day as well. So I think that's a really, really important point, and it's just about being a good manager. And back to that authenticity and role modeling, it's and setting the standard for the team, you know, and the expectations for the team, but then being brave and having those difficult conversations when they have to be had. Otherwise, you know, the standards don't really matter. They're meaningless in some ways.
I think it was Maya Angelou. I think she had a famous quote, didn't she? It's like, it's not about the words you say, you know, it's not about the things you do, it's about how you make people feel.
Yeah.
I think that's a really powerful quote, isn't it?
Definitely. And a very one that links into inclusive leadership. Definitely. Thank you so much for that, Gary. Mark, we've got another question in. This is actually a wee bit of a tough one, actually. I thought Gary's was hard, but this is maybe a wee bit slightly tougher. This question we have from a member is really a wee bit of a challenging question. So that what they've said isn't the concept and idea of inclusive leadership a fabricated notion that implicitly fosters a divisive atmosphere?
A deep breath from my side here. Like I said, this is a really tough question. I'm just wondering what's behind the question, and you know, who's asked it and what's their experience of this? Because look me up, contact me, link in with me or something, and let's have a conversation about this, because certainly, you know, I don't think inclusive leadership is a fabricated notion, but if you do, I'd like to really understand why, and why you feel that, and what the experience is that you've had that makes you think that. And also, this word, a divisive atmosphere. Again, you know, I don't understand that. You must have had an experience that I really don't relate to and don't understand, because I think inclusive leadership is here. It's here to stay. It's been proven to be the right type of leadership, and it creates the right kind of behaviors and the right kind of environments, the cultures that aren't divisive. And if you've experienced that, I'm sorry that you have experienced that, and I'd love to understand your experience.
I do wonder, Mark, whether this goes back to maybe an example of, as we were speaking earlier about inclusive leadership, about authenticity.
Yeah.
And actually, if people aren't role models, so they say one thing and they do another,
yeah,
then it feels unfair as a result of that. then you could understand why someone would maybe feel that, you know, it's all, you know, this is all talk, it's a notion, it's not really something that works in reality. So you know, you could see why that people would feel like that if it isn't delivered in an authentic way.
And Joanne, that, you know, possibly that's the experience. You know, it would be interesting to understand and find out what that experience was, because clearly it's something's gone wrong somewhere.
I mean, just to add, I do think perhaps this idea, you know, when we started on this kind of diversity and inclusion journey, you know, we did start a lot with the D bit, the diversity bit. You know, and the, you know, and a lot of that is kind of putting people in certain boxes, you know, whether that's race or gender or, you know, sexuality or whatever. And therefore, and I do think those are important things. And I do think understanding those different personal characteristics and people feeling like there are people like them in their world of work, I think all of those things are important. But I also, I think we have seen how some people can see that as a divisive thing if we're giving, you know, leadership development programs through a particular subsection of our workforce, then perhaps that you could see how that could be seen as being divisive, because we're not making that available to everyone. So I do wonder if some of that question comes from the idea that the D piece in some ways is maybe just kind of divided us rather than brought us together in some ways. Although it's interesting that the comment is about inclusive leadership, I just wonder if that's kind of, you know, that diversity piece and the focus on the differences, as opposed to focusing on the things that unite us, may sometimes lead to that type of thinking. I think that's the other possibility. And I do think D without I, you're almost, I kind of feel like you're almost wasting your time, right? Because, you know, my experience of when you just focus on D is you hire, let's take gender again, right? If you hire lots more women, and then because you haven't done the I piece, they all leave just as quickly.
or Gary, or don't reach their potential.
Absolutely.
You know, and all the other barriers to performance that, you know, we call accidental sexisms are put in the way. You know, I think, as you've said there, we need to focus on the I. If we get the inclusion bits right, then actually diversity will almost by naturally follow.
And it is that all of us in conversation, isn't it? We can't, you know, and that's the thing. I think we can elevate, you know, groups that have been traditionally underrepresented, but still support, you know, everybody else in the workplace too, right? I think we can do both of those two things at the same time, I would hope.
Yeah.
I know. No, thanks for that, both. That's really interesting insight. And I think, you know, it does just back to that. I think that's a brilliant point, actually, Gary, to finish on. Is it about all of us? Because as a collective, we can achieve so much more. And as a diverse collective, we can appreciate and achieve so much more. So I think we'll finish on that note. Thank you so much, Mark and Gary, for your time and your insight today. I hope the listeners have enjoyed our second podcast. We do have a third scheduled, and hopefully this has given you some ideas about what each of us can do as individuals to build a more inclusive culture. If you have the privilege of leading and managing others, maybe you can utilise your position of authority to influence those around you. Next time, we're going to look at how we go about changing some of the processes within organisations and how we need to think about DE&I as a transformational change programme that leads to sustainable businesses. But that's all for now. Thank you so much again to Mark and Gary, and I'll speak to you next time.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.